Hey, it's Ari Lehman, the first Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th. And I'm so proud to be here with Jim and Donnie on Wrestle Horror. Remember, Jason never dies.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror.
Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meet Hook Jim, the Wrestle Horror Podcast. With me, as always, my co-host Donnie Hoover and everybody. Donnie and I are happy to say we are celebrating our 100th episode of Wrestle Horror.
Yep, whoa! The big 100.
Wow. 100 episodes.
That's fantastic.
And who better to have on episode 100, a milestone, the very first Jason Voorhees, Ari Lehman. Ari, my friend, thank you for coming on to the show.
Thank you so much, Jim and Donnie. It's an honor to be here on Wrestle Horror, because I love how all these worlds are just coming together, you know, after all the insanity we've been through, but now you see all these worlds just coming together: wrestling, horror, rock and roll, gaming, you know, it just goes on and on. And I'm happy to be a part of it.
It is definitely a big melting pot and we absolutely love it. Ari, I've got to say, my partner, Donnie here, huge Jason fan.
Yeah, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. I see there you've got the great Kane Hodder. And hockey mask. And of course, right there, the Camp Crystal Lake sign. I hope you got Kane or somebody to autograph it. You know, I had the great fortune to visit the location of Camp Crystal Lake. Now, that was last August. Nice. And it was fantastic. It's an amazing location. If you get the chance to do it, it's an amazing experience. You know, I don't know where you are all located, but it's in Hardwick, New Jersey, which is not far from Blairstown, New Jersey. And the camp experience is amazing. You get to stay in a cabin. You get to go out in the canoe. You get to go in the shower. You get to see all the different locations where all the different kills happen. You get to watch Friday the 13th on the beach.
Nice.
Where the battle between Mama and Alice Hardy went down. And you're watching and they have a spotlight on the canoe. It's amazing. And the best thing about it is that all the proceeds go to helping 1,000 kids, guys. 1,000 kids get to go to summer camp because of that. So in other words, they're on and off different weeks. So right now they're not on, but they're going to be back on in August. And I'm going to have the great honor to be there with Adrienne King herself. She's the survivor gal, the original Alice Hardy. Is going to be there. And I, you know, we're definitely going to go canoe riding again. And we the fans get to do all kinds of crazy photo ops like last time. I don't know if we're doing all the same things, but I think because it was a bit restricted, we had a little more freedom in terms of timing. So, this time there's going to be a lot more people. Thank goodness. But we certainly had a lot of fun taking pictures with people in the canoe and dunking them in the water. I love that. I ran right in the water. All the first Jason fans know, as soon as I got there, I did a clip where, you know, I jumped in the water and I came out, you know, me. And then we slowed it down and we used that for a million things. So, but I have to admit, guys, the water was warm. It was wonderful. Of course, it was August, so
he's going to make me buy a damn ticket.
No, you got to check it out, man. As a matter of fact, I think the one with me And Adrian might be close to sold out if it's not sold out already. So, you know, but no matter what, they have just being there. Now, one of the things about it is it really puts you in that. It's hard to explain. It's more than just a mood. You get in that environment and you feel kind of like you're in the movie again. And you recognize how much that location is such a big part of the movie, almost a star of the movie.
Right.
You know, I agree. And you already answered one of my questions about whether or not you jumped out of the water.
Like, oh, yeah. I was there for quite a few days. I went swimming every day. And it was an amazing feeling, I have to admit, you know, just to go back there after 40 years, guys. And, you know, I'd never been back there at all. So, and then just going back there and being able to just, wow, hey, you're back. Just go back in the water.
You know? Gotta do it, huh?
Well, one of the more specific to the whole production process. Of course, you all know Tom Savini and Tasso Stavrakis, who did all the makeup for Jason, as well as all the amazing kills, the Kevin Bacon scene and Mama's head and all that. Oh yeah. So I'm a vegetarian. So I'm making my little, like, what do we have? These veggie corn dogs. So there was no, cause they had other food. So I was making them in the pizza oven in the camp. Okay. And somebody walks by and they say, that's the pizza oven where they baked Mama's head. when they did the scene where her head rolled, they said, yeah, they used that pizza oven to bake her head. So I was there and walking around the kitchen area, I turned the corner and I went in this one room, okay? And it was like goosebumps, guys, because I just felt it all again. And that's where they had this barber chair where they did all the makeup for me, for Betsy Palmer. And I just remember all the shenanigans that went on in there. It was a lot of fun to be on the set and see all the fun that actors have, you know, in to be that age and watch all that. But it just all came back in that back room they're using for storage now. But it was very, very, you know, I went, whoa, man. And I remember, for instance, when they had me on that barber chair and they didn't let me see any of the makeup the whole time, okay? Right. And finally it was done. So they turned the barber chair around so I was facing the mirror. And they left. And I just remember the eeriest feeling because, you know, they said, okay, don't open your eyes, you know. And then I opened my eyes when they had gone. And to see myself, first of all, the first thought was, who's that? You know, I literally, who's that? And then I realized, oh my gosh. And I have to admit, it made me have a great deal of sympathy for the character, for Jason, you know, that initial phase. I think that's what they kind of wanted before the vengeful phase, but more the, you know, how it must have felt, or, you know, no one could ever imagine these sort of things, but that's what horror is all about, is stretching the imagination. So there you go. And in that moment, wow, goosebumps. Amazing.
I can only imagine being gone for so long to
right.
Memories kept rushing back.
Oh, yeah. it was surprising. I honestly wasn't ready for all of that, but it was definitely a happy memory for me. I mean, I had a blast on the set. I was a kid mm-hmm. at a summer camp. It was a beautiful summer. And you know, all these, the crew and the actors were from New York. It was a New York based, it wasn't a Hollywood based, it was New York based. So they were all really happy to be out of the city. It was a terrible summer. I remember they're complaining about the heat and the pollution. And so everybody, you know, and they were having a good time, you know. It was 1979, guys. So after the, there was all kinds of good time. And after the, but there was a lot of hard work. I mean, we would start, for instance, for Jason, I had to be on the set at 4:30 in the morning.
Oh, man.
For the 7 o'clock call. So sometimes that worked better than others. But ultimately, we only did it 3 times. Now, of course, the final sequence was filmed in, I mean, as you guys, I'm sure, know, the first drowning scene was going to be the only scene of Jason in all of cinematic history. That was it. It was just going to be a drowned boy. That was it. And I even went home thinking, gosh, that sucks, you know, like, that's it, you know, like, what? And then so when Sean Cunningham called me up and said, we want you to come back to the set. Now, this was, they had wrapped in August. This was October. So I said, you know, my character died. How can I, how's this going to work? And he said, no, you get your revenge. And that was it. I was hooked. He knew. He's a very smart guy. He knew. I've been thinking about it. He said, no, you get your revenge. And I didn't even ask, you know, anything. I was like, okay, where do you want me to go? You know, so when I found out what the concept was going to be, that I actually got to be kind of like a little Jaws in the woods kind of guy, you know? So I, you know, to me, it was real. It was real. But they said, no, this is a dream sequence. It's not a real thing that happened. It's Alice's dream. And even the script said Alice's dream. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I was just, what? How do I get my revenge if it's a dream? You said I get my revenge. Da-da-da. Okay. And so I think Tom Savini just said, Ari, get back. And so he said, you can think of it the way that you want to think of it, you know, in your own head, but don't, you know, that's the way Sean and the writer really saw it, as a dream sequence. So, I mean, I ask you, gentlemen, how it ended up that Jason Voorhees is not a dream like Freddy Krueger or some fantastic figure, but a very real, very, you know, if you see Jason, you're going to die. Okay. You know, there's no reasoning with him. It's like that mask of look at that mask there. There's no, it's a mask of death. So, and mm-hmm. that, you know, of course comes later, but you know, so, but they didn't imagine it that way. I did. My question is it not the fans? Is it not the fans' perception that transformed the character? I guess you could apply that to wrestling too, guys. You know what I'm thinking? Because in wrestling, isn't it like that? It's how do the fans feel about that wrestler? Isn't that true? Will that, you know, so.
Absolutely.
You know, the fans, thank goodness for the amazing, dedicated, wonderful fans of Jason. I love them.
Yeah, I want to go back if I can, because you said something that kind of caught my attention. I just want to see if I heard it right or wrong. On those, when you go to the camps and stuff, like you said you and Adrian are going, and you said you go out in the water, do you guys actually go out with fans and let them get in a canoe and reenact the scene, or is that what you said?
We did last year. I don't know what their plans are specifically for this year. I heard that, I don't know if that specific photo op is available due to the fact that last year we had about 12 people per group. And this year there's going to be about 72 people per group.
Oh, wow.
So
that might probably take a while. You probably had the dishwater hands after it was all done, wouldn't you?
I did. But that was okay. And I'm certain that there will be photo ops by the lake itself. I don't know if we'll be in the lake, though. You know?
Right. Yeah, because I got a photo up with Kane where he was choking me, the famous Kane Hodder choke pick.
Of course.
And then then you said that, and I was like, holy crap, is he going to take a picture, like a video, pulling you underwater or something? I was like, I'd have been signing up while we were talking.
Like, oh, no, they did that. They indeed did that, Donnie. Last year, they had, they would have certain people purchased. They would get in the canoe, and I kind of came up behind them. Now, only one brave soul actually asked me to dunk them, and that was three. That was my agents.
Yeah,
it was the day before.
I'd do that in a heartbeat. Yeah. I'd be like, dunk me and keep me under for a couple seconds.
I'm pretty sure they posted it. So if you look at Camp Crystal Lake Tours, there will be because my agents had me do that. The people who set it all up with the celebrities, and they're really wonderful. And, and I can't emphasize more how well they set that tour up. So it's safe, but also scary. And again, it's the Boy Scouts who are running it, and a certain family who are just the most wonderful people. But I got to admit, it's quite rigorous. They have me up. It's almost like being on the set again. I have to be up. I have to be up around 4 a.m. again. We got to be very, very clean cut on the campus there. But we're more than happy to do it. And I'm very eager to see Adrienne King again, who I haven't seen in many years. I live in Chicago and she lives in Oregon. So, I'm sure that, but we're great friends. So, she loves to paint. I wonder if she'll get time to do some painting there by the lake. I don't know, but I intend to play some music because I took a song. Okay. We took this song, Rocky Top. This song, it's a bluegrass song, and so I turned it into Crystal Lake. So, instead of being in the Tennessee Hills, it's in the New Jersey Hills. Reworded Rocky Top, and I intend to sing that until they ask me to stop.
There you go. Very cool.
Over and over.
Now, you talked about how the, sorry, Jim, I'm just kind of taking over. you had talked about where, a lot of Jason fans know that the final scene wasn't in the original script and it was added in later. And I'm sure you guys probably didn't know that when you created that final scene, that it was going to be one of the most iconic final scenes in movie cinema history. But when you guys did the scene and it was all edited and you got, and it got shown before it went out in theaters, could you guys sense that that was going to be something special for people after it was all done and in the can and all that?
Well, particularly Tom and Sean, I think, were very keen on that. Watching the effect of, famously, Savini would go to the movie theaters and at the end, he would turn around. And instead of watching the screen, he would watch the reaction of the crowd. And he told me, he saw, grown men weeping and just gallons of popcorn flying in the air and people being stopped dead in their tracks because they thought the movie was actually over. They used every device. He even said to me, it was almost like a haunted house where they use misdirection. In other words, they make you think that the credits are going to roll. In fact, they give you all these cues. There's, it's the morning after with the water and the sun. And then it's like straight out of a Shakespeare play. In comes the policeman at the eight. He's saying, are you okay? Mm-hmm. This policeman, this strong policeman, are you okay? Oh, everything's got to be okay now. And she's just, and this wonderful violin music swells up. That's when I jump out of the water. Right. Damn, you totally, So in a lot of ways, I think that they were having fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's why it worked so well. You know, in their creative process, they just thought, well, we could go this far. And if we go this far, we could take it up a notch and go this far. In fact, to get the real effect, Sean knew that he had to really make Adrian scared. And now Adrian is a tough gal who lives in the woods, so she's not necessarily going to get scared that easily. But so what he did was, he didn't tell Adrian or Tom or anybody that I was going to come out of jumping out of the water. Okay, let me explain. Sean comes over to me, says, okay, the cameras are rolling. See, it's very clever. So to me, he says, you won't be able to hear me say action if I said action anyway, because you're underwater. So just look up at the bubbles. And when the bubbles clear, that's action. And he goes, you're the director of this scene, Ari. Okay, now the cameras are rolling. Now, I was like, oh my God, I'm the director. Okay. So I went out in the water and I see what his plan was, because if he had said action, of course she would have been ready for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down, but see, when I went down, see, this is the part he hadn't bargained for, I think. And he kind of got stuck with in a way, because they couldn't reshoot it, is that I came out of the water like a monster, like all gangbusters, like, because I was underwater. I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to come out in a playful manner, gently, you know, so as not to hurt this actress. And then I thought, that's going to suck. And I have this one take, and this is it, man. And then I kind of thought, you know, go for motivation, you know. And the motivation was, she killed my mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bitch killed my mother. Bam, grab the thing. I come out of the water, somehow instinctively, I don't know, see, this is what was crazy, instinctively grab the thing, and they're filming, okay, but then I look at Adrian, and I realize she has no idea what's happening, and she didn't know, and I'm like, oh, no, you know, I don't want to hurt her, and so, but my arm goes slamming right into there, and as you see, her face just goes, wah, and they cut it. Because she grabbed my arms and threw me off of her, get off of me, and fell out of the boat. But they cut it just to get that look of abject fear. And then, okay, they had me do it again. So if you look back at the scene, which is only seconds, by the way, but they edited it so well that, okay, first you see me like this, that's the second take. Then all of a sudden it's a close-up. Ah, that's the first take. And then it goes back to where they tipped the boat and everything, because Savini was there and everybody was ready. And to Adrian's credit, they hadn't told her. And when they did tell her, you can't see it on her face that she knows, because she's already been dunked in the water one time. She flashed. So that time when she goes backwards into the water, I mean, that's, you know, that's some damn good acting, I'd like to say, you know,
yeah,
on her part, because, you know, she could have been like, I've had it, get a stunt double to do this or something. I don't know. But see, that's the other thing, guys. It was independent film. There was no stunt doubles. You know, when they needed a stunt double for Betsy, because as everyone knows, the back of that famous scene where her head flies off, you know, and you could see the hands, but now on Blu-ray, you could see Tasso Stavrakos's hairy hands, because, you know, they used Tasso and they didn't shave his hands. Oh, you won't see it, but now famously, you can see his big hairy hands. And I thought to myself, gosh, you know, it's almost an insult to say that, but no, but the story goes, of course, that in order to get that scene together, and it was late at night, again, there was no other option. So they just got Tasso to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there you go. But being on that set and watching them and their resourcefulness and their inventiveness and their teamwork and just their collaborative nature, I mean, that's something that has stayed with me for a lifetime, because I really had a great, you know, perspective of the whole thing. The movie that I was in prior to that, working for Sean Cunningham, there was a ton of kids in it. So it was more like all about, oh, we're a bunch of kids having a lot of fun doing it. But in this case, I was able to really watch and learn, as it were. So I learned how to make have a project where you have like no resources and you make the most out of it. So I'm good at that. I don't know if someone gave me 10 gazillion dollars, then you have too many choices, you know?
Right.
It forces your creativity to have those limitations.
Did 2020 take its toll on your fitness? Well, body slam the pandemic and get back in shape with WrestleFit. This innovative program combines all the fitness regimens you'll need to reach your goals. The WrestleFit workout will bring strength training, cardio, and the world of professional wrestling together in a fun, new, and exciting way. Have yourself a blast working out with dumbbells, kettlebells, slam balls, ropes, tires, and an 18-foot full-size wrestling ring. The WrestleFit workout isn't just for pro wrestlers. The WrestleFit workout is for everybody. At the Now Training Center, you can pursue your fitness goals and learn how to train like a professional wrestler without all the bumps, bruises, and slams with the WrestleFit workout. Go to www.newohiowrestling.com/training for more information, or stop by the Now Training Center at 625 Eastgate Parkway, Blacklick, Ohio, 43004, Unit 6137.
So let's talk about first Jason, your band. I mean, you guys have been together for quite some time now.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very proud of first Jason. I think first Jason, again, proves how much that relationship between the fans and artists is so crucial nowadays. And it's totally a fan-driven phenomenon. And I was already doing music when I was on the set of Friday the 13th. I was already little jazz piano player, and I was getting awards for doing that. And then I went to New York City and I was studying jazz there, and I got to watch some of the greatest jazz musicians of all time. Like, I could go downstairs from my dorm room and see like Sir Rowland Hanna and McCoy Tyner and Hank Jones and Tommy Flanagan and the greatest piano players in the world, all for the cost of a beer. And I would just sit there and watch them. And they would always tease me, are you going to finish that beer? You know, like, I would just, you know, watch and then go back up to my room. You know, this was New York City in those days. And so I was into that kind of jazz, man, like real jazz. And then kind of like the Kenny G jazz came out, you know, the mellow jazz, you know. And there's nothing wrong with mellow jazz, but that's not my thing, you know. So, but see, me with the long hair and the look, people always kind of felt like, oh, if you're doing jazz, you got to be like Kenny G, man. You know, come on, look at you. And I was like, no, man, I'm into this kind of jazz, you know. And they say, Kenny G. So what happened with me was I got into world music. I got into reggae music and world music. I had a friend who was from West Africa, and he calls me up one day. He says, Adi, there is a man who has come here from Lagos, and he wants you to audition for him. So I went to audition, and long story short, I started playing with a band from Nigeria, and that band ended up working for Interscope Records and Tuff Gong Records. That was a band called Majek Fashek. So this was an artist who's passed away now. He was a genius. He was kind of like Bob Marley meets Jimi Hendrix from Africa. Okay. And so he was signed to Interscope and he was signed to Tuff Gong Records, and people can hear his music. He had an album called Spirit of Love, And I'm on that album too. But so we toured all over the world, and it was the 90s, and, you know, world music was big in Europe and America and everywhere. And then after, I mean, quite frankly, after 9/11 happened, boom, that was it for world music. I was in New York. It was like, where's, you know, so see now at that time, I had met my beautiful wife, Elaine, during my world music days. So we moved to Chicago after actually being Red Cross volunteers at Ground Zero in the first days after the opening of what they called the hole. And I saw all of that, and, you know, but on to better thing. So I'm here in Chicago now, and I get an email from somebody, and it says, did you sign this photo of Jason Voorhees, little Jason? And I said, now it all came back to me. And I said, huh? He said, yeah, because somebody charged me $50 for this on eBay. And I had not signed it, okay? So it turns out someone had been forging my signature. So I thought to myself, huh? And what happened was, long story short, it was actually a horror vendor named Eric Lee Nash, who has a great t-shirt company now. And he got me hooked up to go to the Chiller Theater Fangoria Convention in the Meadowlands.
Nice.
So I saw this, and I had my reggae albums and stuff, and I realized, you know, everyone was showing me love, but metal is horror and metal, you know, are connected.
Yes, sir.
And during my days at New York University, even though I was playing jazz, I would still go and check out metal. I would go and see and punk, you know, I would go and see the Bad Brains. I would go and see, I saw White Zombie. I saw Dead Kennedys. And I was good friends with the singer of a band called Reagan Youth, who I urge people to check out. So I kind of started drawing upon those ideas and thinking to myself, let's create something more along those lines. So I got a lot of help from two people specifically. One was a drummer called Cleaver from the band Cro-Mags, and another was a bass player who's known as Nefarious from the band Macabre. If Macabre now is a seriously amazing death metal band. First Jason, of course, is heavy metal. Macabre is death metal, pioneers of death metal. I learned so much from those two people, a great deal from Chuck, also known as Nefarious, who's an amazing bass player. They just came out with an album, by the way, Macabre. It's called Carnival of Killers, and I really urge people to check it out. So I came out with my first album, Jason Is Watching. That's the album cover you have right there. I really tried to shoot from the hip, kind of. We got songs like Jason Never Dies, Machete Is My Friend, Jason Is Watching, Sink or Swim. You know, I was really just coming from that idea. And that got a lot of acceptance and love. So now, you know, as time passed, what we really have done, and we have a great advantage that we never take for granted, is, of course, that I was little Jason. So that means we can come into a town and get all the horror rock bands or that kind of style of bands. And we might be in a big town, or we might be in some little town out in the middle of nowhere, as it were. And that's where we kind of have the mutual validation. You know what I'm saying, guys? In other words, mm-hmm. There's those kids, they've got the tattoos. They're the metal kids of that town. They're the punk kids of that town. And so here comes little Jason, you know, they want to do the pictures and do all this stuff, but it's really, if I'm validating them, they're validating what I'm doing too. Sure. So I learned a lot by listening, but I also am very grateful for how open-hearted and open-eared the metal and punk community have been. And I would say, okay, we skip up to Lord of the Lake. We made this album, Lord of the Lake. We got two great videos out there, Kill for Mother and Voorhees is the name. One Tier Productions here in Chicago helped us. Also in Chicago, Uptown Recording, where Nonpoint records. Now, you guys should definitely be checking out Nonpoint, because, I mean, these are just people I'm very grateful to be associated with. Nonpoint, where we record, they record. Now, they did an album recently. They just dropped a song. Everybody's got to check it out. It's called Ruthless. Check out Nonpoint Ruthless. You will thank me. You will listen to it over and over again. That's right down. Their video for Ruthless is amazing. And this is a group of people, Uptown Recording and Nonpoint. They've been so nice to me in encouraging me from that standpoint of those, you know, I just, those warriors coming back from victory, as it were. And to have their support and love and help, it's just been amazing. And so that kind of led to me recording two songs recently. One is called The Price of Peace, and the other is called The Scapegoat. And that's got us even more attention. I'm just happy to say. So in that time too, another band who you probably heard of called Ice Nine Kills. Yeah. Ice Nine Kills is a younger new metal band, okay? I mean, Nonpoint's also new metal, but this is more coming out of, they're super theatrical. Every song is about a different horror franchise. You guys got to check out Ice Nine Kills, especially their Silver Stream album. When I say every song, they have a song about Jason. They have a song about Michael. They have a song about Freddy. They have a song about It. They have a song about The Exorcist. They have a song about Jaws. And do they have a guy in a shark costume come out on stage? Yes, they do. And do they have a giant, you know, hockey mask? Okay, Spencer Charnas, the lead singer of that band, comes out. He's wearing half Freddy, half Jason mask. Amazing. And I've never seen such again. They are proof positive that what it's all about today is that relationship with the fans and realizing that the fans don't owe us anything. They're giving us their time and money. And we all got to work towards having a ton of fun together. And we got to work our hardest to write some good music. And if you ever check out Ice Nine Kills. So Ice Nine Kills asked me to sing on one of their songs. They did a song called Thank God It's Friday. They did an acoustic version. So they had me sing on it. And, you know, it's like all of a sudden this whole other generation, guys, you know, this, I guess, you know, under 20, but, you know, 20 something too. And they have fans. Their fans are just across the board. And, you know, I'm getting these, you know, messages. Oh, man, you know, me and my friend are crying about how this song, you know, these kids are just so into this music. And so that was an honor. So then I asked Spencer, I said, okay, fine. I had Spencer come and he did some vocals for a remix. We did a remix of The Price of Peace. So I want everybody to check out Spotify, you know, check out First Jason, firstjason.com, of course, but we're out there on Spotify, on Amazon, on iTunes, on all every platform. On that version, there's another band I want to mention, and they're called Grave Robber. If you're check out Grave Robber. We got their lead singer, Wretched Grave Robber, as he calls himself. He does these really scary voiceovers, like they're just really scary. So, here's some intriguing stuff. The song, The Scapegoat, you know, it's based on the story from Leviticus, you know, in my own weird manner. And so I just had him recite some of the chapters. And man, it is it's amazing. So please check that out. That's called The Scapegoat Demon Remix. And, you know, So now we're doing more recordings. I'm so glad you asked us about this. For instance, those two songs will be on a 7-inch vinyl that's going to be put out by Nerve Agent Records. So we've got the pre-sale link up for that, for the 7-inch vinyl to get those two songs. And then we're also doing a song for, I don't know if you guys have seen The Barn, a movie called The Barn that I was in, which is, it's another fun thing everyone should know about. So now there's going to be The Barn 2. The Barn, I play this character, Dr. Rock, who's, he's kind of like you guys. He's a video DJ guy, you know, from the 90s. And so Dr. Rock, we're doing a song for Dr. Rock for The Barn 2. But in The Barn 2, you've got Lloyd Kaufman's in there, and Linnea Quigley is also in there.
Okay.
Nice. So, you know, lots of good things. But, you know, I do have some cool things to talk about in terms of wrestling because, okay, it was just 2 weeks ago, I was at Wrestling Universe in Commack, Long Island, doing a signing. I don't know if you guys have heard about that place. And then just prior to that, you must have heard of, in Baltimore, the event called Celeb Fest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I was at Celeb Fest. I think I might have been one of the, was I the only, I don't know if I was the only horror actor, but yeah, that was a lot of fun actually. And I've been welcomed into that fold, and I'm very, very happy to do that. You know, who was there? There was my bass player became fascinated with one of the wrestlers who was like a, he was, you guys must know him. He's like a Hulk Hogan lookalike wrestler. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Uh-uh.
Do you guys know?
I know there's a cosplay fan that does that.
No, this guy was, he's like at the wrestling thing. Is he a cosplayer? Because he was full on Hulk Hoganing it.
Oh, and I don't know if it's the same guy or not, but yeah.
Yeah, we saw one at a wrestling convention not too long ago.
That's the guy. I think that's the guy. And then, yes, so that was fun. I think that there's so much. I'm fascinated by that kind of theatricality, and you know, I don't know. Then what? I was just in Home Depot yesterday, so I was wearing a football jersey, and somebody came up to me and thought that I was a pro wrestler. I can't remember the name they said. It was something like Doc, something like that. They were like, "You look like this pro wrestler who was like a, what do they call like the weight group who's not, you know, who's like, I'm like, what do they call it?
Cruiserweight,
exactly. Mm-hmm. He's a cruiserweight. Duh, duh, duh. I'm like, oh, okay. It's like, how could you think that, you know, I think it's the beard factor. Of course, I've met the great, you know, some of the greats. Okay, well, let's see. Okay, let's tell these stories, okay, in proper fashion. Okay, it's Brutus, the barber beefcake. Of course, I met him, and he told me, he regaled me with stories about how they would travel around in a limousine, and that's how they got around, and I can't tell you all the details because it was like a movable party. And then, now who's the one I'm thinking of? Dugan.
Jim Duggan?
Duggan. Mm-hmm. Jim Duggan. He is hilarious. I was hanging out with him. We were at an event together, and you know, we ended up just him and the band and us. We were all just, you know, getting a bit rowdy there, having a good time, you know. And but the best story I got to tell, of course, you know, is Let me think. What is my best? Okay. Why is his name escaping me? This is terrible. It's the kilt wearing amazing
Roddy Piper.
Thank you. Okay, Roddy Piper. Okay. Had to have been the nicest person who ever lived on the planet Earth. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you two
Roddy Piper stories. One, I go out to LA. I'm hanging out with a bunch of my buddies at some, you know, fancy LA bar, you know, all this hubbub, but I'm kind of fish out of water. I don't know anybody there, you know, and then they're hitting on these girls. They separate from me. All of a sudden I'm just like, I've got my drink. I'm just walking around. I'm kind of lost. You know, that John Travolta look of like, you know, what am I doing here or there? All of a sudden I hear this, Ari, what are you doing, man? And I turn around, it's Roddy Piper. And he's like, you're coming with us. Come on, man, you're partying with us. And he's got this whole entourage not at that bar, but at like the VIP bar, you know? Mm. And he's like, this is little Jason, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm like having the time of my life. Finally, my friends come up to me. Oh, they're whining about how these girls gave them fake phone numbers and stuff. I'm like, I'm Barney with Roddy Piper. And right. Then,
go try again.
He was so, so nice. One time he was signing. Okay, he's signing. And he must have had 200 people in his line. But now the men's room was over by the end. You know, like you had to walk by his whole line to get to the men's room. So I'm thinking, you know, I'll just sneak by. And, you know, they had a handler and like walking on. All of a sudden, again, the same thing. Ari, where do you think you're going? And he says to his whole crowd, ladies and gentlemen, it's the first Jason Voorhees. Ari Lehman. I'm like, I must have turned the color of that balloon right there. Oh my God. What a person. Yeah. He's amazing. He's amazing.
That's a great story. Yeah. It really is.
And then DDP, this guy, also an inspiration, Diamond Dallas Page, correct? And he's, uh-huh. That guy is, I've met on several occasions, and just his energy and all the stuff that he's done with the, I guess it's a kind of yoga.
Yeah, DDP yoga. Yep.
Something else, man. Watching how many people he's helped. And so, you know, I'm very, I guess, fascinated with, and I love the camaraderie, again, in that community. And, you know, we have that in music, but it's kind of different, you know. In the sense, and it's funny too, because wrestlers actually have to compete with each other directly, you know, right. Whereas bands are kind of working together, kind of working against, you know, whatever it is, but we never have to actually go head to head. I mean, not like wrestlers anyway. So there you go. It's fascinating. I'd like to be involved more. And there is a segue there, because my friend's Nonpoint.
Yeah.
That song Ruthless is the title of something called TMA. What is that? Not MMA, but total.
TNA, total. TNA. Yeah, TNA, Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. So their song Ruthless is like the song for that. So
nice.
I think it's time for us to do a wrestling song too. I guess.
Well, I own a wrestling promotion, so you can come down and film it in our ring if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll take you up on that, bro. We'll definitely do that.
Yep.
We get Jason Voorhees in the ring.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Who would Jason be up against? That's the whole thing. This future of Jason. Maybe he has to go into the future, bring back Jason X.
There you go. Jason
X in the ring.
We could get whoever you wanted.
That would be cool, man. That would be cool.
We've even talked about doing a Halloween event where we had horror icons facing off against one another.
Yep. Let's do it. How come? Let's do it, man. 2022. Let's go.
There you go. Start of a new era.
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea. I'm sure that we could get away with it.
To a degree, probably.
Well, there's different ways of doing it. Yeah, do it for charity. Exactly. Do it for charity.
There you go.
Then you can use any character. And cosplayers are technically satire. Technically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually have a couple cosplayers that come to our gym and stuff and do our fitness program.
I bet, man. Mm-hmm. Those costumes are heavy.
Yeah.
I always see those guys. They're always like, it's so hot under here. Are you having a good time? It's so hot.
You just laugh at him like, tell me about it.
I know. No, that's why I say I never wear people. Like, why do you not wear masks, or why don't you wear something on stage? The first you start rocking out. I mean, I'm one of those people, like, you know, I get overheated really quick. I don't know. I'm not, I'm hot blooded, I guess, but I can't. The second I put on a mask, no, two songs in. I tried that.
Get it. Didn't work out too good, huh?
No. I saw one band who shall remain nameless, and we were playing with them on Halloween. It was us and Green Jelly, who's an amazing band. You know, they do the thing with the crazy big heads and they have everybody. So these guys, I think they were inspired by that. So they were wearing full furry costumes.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, no, like these big, like lion head, panther head, tiger head, and they look great. I mean, I admit, they came out on stage, they looked awesome. And I said to my drummer, I said, you wait, by the third song, this guy tore off the head, he threw his bass down, he left the stage, he was so angry. Oh, man.
That's funny.
When you look at Gwar, but see, it's very deceptive with Gwar. I've had the honor of playing with them, and they showed me their equipment is very light. It's deliberately made, you know, they're masters of theater. So they know to make the props, you know, with just like bamboo and styrofoam. And although they look like, really solid metal, but they're made very light. And then they even have little fans. Yes, they have little fans in there. In their helmets.
Oh, very cool.
So
cool indeed.
Ari, this is going to be kind of weird because you technically are a slasher.
Yeah. I'm going to feel like such a dumbass asking this. Yeah.
But Donnie's got a question to ask of all of our guests.
All right. Yeah. It's a funny question for you. Like I said, I'm gonna feel like a dumbass asking you this, but we ask everybody, and it's kind of, there's no right or wrong answer. We just like to see people's creativity. And the question is, you are the main serial killer in your own horror film. What is your go-to kill?
Oh, my go-to kill. Oh my gosh. I mean, I think, you know, you got to get up close, you know, you got to get in there, show how much it means to you. You don't want this long distance, like shooting with a crossbow thing. And then, you know, the sleeping bag, they don't even know what's going on. They don't see your face. Right. No, I'm definitely more of the ninja style, you know, sneak up with the big katana, and at the last moment, you know, and the person dies, but it's executed with such magnificence, they're like, you know, it almost makes them happy. They're like, oh, that was awesome. And then they realize, oh, they're dead.
Right.
It's the master slasher.
There you go.
People want him to, because, you know, who wants a boring guy? Death, just like waiting around the doctors. But screw that, man. Come in and whack, magnificence. You know, that's the way I see it.
I
so there's a strange answer here. Strange.
There you go. That's what we look for.
I mean, there's others though. You know, one that's really good is that Jason has used is the good old, what is it? It's that piano wire, you know, the razor thin wire. I always like that. But I, you know, when they do that in the movies, it looks so easy, but I'm sure that it's not going to be, you know, it's going to get tangled and, you know, messy. Yeah. I said, go with that, you know, sure, either a huge two-handed medieval sword, maybe a machete. Machetes are good, you know.
And you've signed a machete or two.
or 20,000.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I never use the machete, although I do love to kind of do stage fighting and stuff. And I do like using machetes because they're very swashbuckler-ish. They're very piratey. You know, they look kind of like that sort of thing. But I just have fun with it. A great story, of course, is about Richard Brooker, who played the first Jason to ever wear the hockey mask.
Yes.
Who was a dear friend of mine and was one of the greatest friends to all of his friends. He really immensely cared about people and wasn't afraid to show that. And but he would see if I was signing a machete, he would come and he would whisper in my ear, "You never used the machete, Ari." Because of course he was British. "Ari, are you signing a machete? Are you signing a mask, Ari?" So sometimes I hear his voice and I can still hear him sometimes. Okay. So it's an inside joke. But I know, you know, what it means. Those who have wielded it on screen, and I honor them. I always say in my defense, you know, I was the first. So, you know, there's actually no other first. So you couldn't actually go before me. You know, that would be really awkward. Like, I don't know.
They can't take that over.
You know, they would just be messy. So I've gotten permission for most of them. Besides which, I saw Ken Kersinger and Kane Hodder's autograph on one of those sets where it's me and mom. Okay. So if they can sign that, you know.
It's all one big happy family.
Yes, I'd like to think so. I think it really is. I'm sure that you've met a lot of the Jasons and they're really, really wonderful people. Also, of course, Kane, Ted White, who, what an amazing person. Ted White, okay, he's like well into his 80s. And I imagine that right now he's like hunting mountain lion in Colorado or something, like as we speak. He's grappling like a sea bass. And, you know, his wife is like holding his chair down, you know. Yeah. He's like that, man. You've met the guy? He's like that. That's that man. I imagine right now he's on horseback, wind in his hair. Yeah, no, last time I saw him, I said, "So how are you doing, Teddy?" He's like, "I just got a pickup truck. I'm going hunting in Colorado." I'm like, what? Katie? Those people, his age, just sit in a chair and they're amazed that they can do that.
Right.
Look, I'm sitting. No, he's an amazing person. He lifted me up once. I was signing in Niagara Falls and somebody picked me up. Put me down. I turn around. He's like, "Gotcha." He's that kind of guy. But he was John Wayne's stunt double for 17 years. Not just John Wayne, but the horses, the weapons. He was the stunt coordinator for most of the top billed World War II movies, including those films with Frank Sinatra and other greats. So, it's an impressive group of gentlemen that I'm always honored to be a part of.
You know, Ari, I got to tell you, you mentioned Richard Brooker, and I had the honor of meeting him. And I believe I was probably one of the last people to interview him before he passed.
Oh, dude. See, that's so rare. I often bring up Richard, and people say, I never got to meet him. No, so you met Richard. You remember? Yeah. He brought, did he have his camel? He always wore his camel leather jacket and his white shirt. And he all smoked, and you know, he just always did his thing. And the last time I saw him was in Germany, actually. We happened to have a Johnny Walker Red, double Johnny Walker Red together at about, it must have been 4 or 5 in the morning. And I had stayed up. I had to get in the van to go back to America. And I remember, and I thought, wow, that's a strong buzz I got on there, you know, because I normally didn't drink Johnny Walker Red. That was his thing. So, and then I just got this weird feeling like I'm never going to see Richard again. I just had this feeling. I'm watching the German countryside go by, and I was like, whoa, this is some kind of gift moment. And I was like, and then 2 weeks later, I was in LA, and what it was I was there with the band. We were going to leave town, but they wanted to go see the Freddy Krueger? Yeah, the Freddy Krueger house that's in LA. Yeah, it's the Freddy Krueger house. Okay. Yeah, not Michael Myers. Yes, the Freddy Krueger house. So we were going over there, and as many fans know, Richard happened to die on Kane's birthday.
Right.
So we were all looking at, oh, it's Kane's birthday. And then Ryan, the drummer at the time, looked at me and his face just dropped. Because Richard, when we were in Germany, Richard had been very, giving Ryan a lot of guidance and discussing, you know, his future and, you know, because he's a musician and different things, you know, taking a role in his life. And he just looks at me, I said, what? And he said, you know, Richard died. And we were like, what? And I just started bawling, you know, I'm like, why? And they're like, can we still go see the house? I'm like, yeah, let's go, guys, it's fine. I remember walking down the street, just crying to like, get out of their way. You know, I mean, it's not like, we did know that there was something, but, you know, he's always been, you know, super missed. But let's talk about the positive things. Richard Brooker, this is some things most people don't know, directed 10 episodes of Bill Nye, the Science Guy. He probably didn't tell you this in his interview because he wouldn't brag. He probably just talked about, you know, he would never brag. He was a champion polo player, horse polo, okay, who could defeat other players. Now, you know, in polo, if you're super rich, you can have like 3 horses. So that way, you know, but no, Richard would bet and beat those guys. Okay. He was a cool cat, man. He also developed some kind of, some sort of technology that kind of predated cloud technology, in the sense of if you were doing a news program based in New Zealand and you needed to see what you were shooting that day in New York, that you could do that. So he was using systems that, and he got an Academy Award for that, you guys. Oh. Another thing, besides, he was an acrobat and tightrope walker. And he's one of the people who, you know, that act in his younger days, the act where they have a cage that's like a big sphere and the guys in the motorcycles in the circus. Yeah, he used to do that too. So, nice. Yeah. I got to catch up with these guys. You know, I'm pretty sedentary compared to them, you know, playing the guitar, running around the stage. I'm nothing like them.
You're going to take horseback riding lessons now, ain't you?
Yeah, that'll be comical.
So
it'll be worth the comedy.
So Ari, why don't you let everybody know how they can find out more about you, more about First Jason?
Oh, thank you.
And the campground.
Well, I'll be wrestling soon. I'll be coming down to do some wrestling. Well, for the Camp Crystal Lake Tours, yeah, Crystal Lake Tours, check that out, everybody. That's an amazing thing. It's a charity. It's ongoing. It's something everybody should check out, especially if you're a Friday the 13th fan. First Jason, we got that new 7-inch vinyl coming out. And also, you can participate and be in the Barbarian Horde of our new music video production, which is shooting near Scranton, Pennsylvania on August 29th. That's for our song, The Price of Peace. So check us out, firstjason.com, First Jason Official on Facebook, and make sure you mention Wrestle Horror. Now, check out our calendar too. If you come to the merch table and you mention this program, Wrestle Horror, then I will have our bass player wrestle with you. You'll get a free gift for mentioning, I'll autograph something and give it to you for mention. No, a free gift from Wrestle Horror. Thank you so much.
We appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys.
So with that being said, I mean, we couldn't ask for more from some such great support from a great guy. It's good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
It's been too long. It's been like five
years. I agree, Jim. Well, you know, it's been a crazy time.
It has.
But I think things are getting back in, you know, and I will take you up on this offer. We got to come and do something with the band in that.
We're in Columbus, Ohio, so we're not too far.
A minute. We're going to be in Columbus, Ohio, October 23rd. I'm going to be at a place called Sports Fest.
Okay.
Have you heard of that?
Mm-mm. I'm going to look it up, though. See, there you go.
We are in Columbus, and we might be performing that night, too. There's a place called Studio 35. We may be playing there that night. So nice. Check it out. Yeah. So in Columbus, that's it, guys. Forget it. Whenever we have, even if it's, you know, after hours, we're busting in there.
There you go.
Okay.
So it'll be always open for you.
Sweet. Let's get ready to rumble.
I'm Meat Hook Jim for Donnie Hoover and our special guest, First Jason, Ari Lehman. Ari, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
It's been an awesome 100th episode, and we hope to have 100 more thanks to you.
Yep, absolutely.
Jason never dies.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets, facebook.com/WrestleHorror, Instagram @WrestleHorror, Twitter @WrestleHorror, on YouTube at the Wrestle Horror channel. And you can also find us on our website, www.WrestleHorror.com.